Social distancing slows the spread of coronavirus, so stay a minimum of 6 feet away from others and stay home if you can. More info at coronavirus.gov. Let's all do our part, because we're all hashtag alone together. Brought to you by the Ad Council.
This is your tech news briefing for Wednesday, April 1st. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal. To deal with the shortage of intensive care beds and qualified hospital staff, some healthcare workers have been using video conferencing tools to take care of patients sick with the coronavirus. It's called tele-ICU. It's not like your Zoom, and our tech columnist Chris Mims will join us to tell us all about it. But first, our senior personal tech columnist Joanna Stern is back with her tech tip of the day. Hey, Joanna.
I want to pretend to be somebody else for April Fool's Day, but I can't do impressions of anyone. Like, I was just going to do a, hello, this is somebody else on the show today.
But you couldn't even think of a new name.
I can't even think of a new name.
Yeah. So not only can you not do impressions, you can't even think of other people's names.
No, no. And this is me pleading with everyone, please don't do April Fool's Day today. Please. We have enough going on. Just don't do it. Let's forget about it.
Okay.
I mean, let's be honest. We all hate April Fool's Day. We all hate it. We've never liked it. And this is a great excuse to just do away with it. We just don't do it this year or any year ever. Maybe I hate fun. I hate fun.
Oh, that's it. There you go. That's why. Now we know. Now we're getting to the root of the problem. Okay. So, Joanna, what's your tech tip?
My tech tip for today, and it's a pretty good one for April Fools, but for any day, is to give our eyes some rest and some relief because we are looking at our screens so much more now. I am not going to share on air what my Apple screen time stats look like this week because through the roof. And I'm not actually going to sit here and lecture anyone about not being on their screens right now. I think that's very hard to do. And this is the world we're living in. We are using our screens to connect with so many things. But we can take some time for our eyes and give our eyes some relief. So have you ever heard of the 20-20-20 rule?
No.
Okay. So you have to take a break every 20 minutes by looking at an object 20 feet away for 20 seconds. It's not that hard, but that's all you have to do. And that gives your eyes a break from your screens. If you don't have time for that, remember to blink, which is another simple tip. If you don't have time for that, if you don't even have time for blinking, I think you should make the time to change some settings on your phone that may help with your eyes. So if you haven't yet used dark mode and you've got the latest version of iOS or even the latest version of Android, these both support dark mode, which turns most of the white on the screen to black. And there's competing competing thoughts on if this is actually better for your eyes, but I find it so much nicer to look at, especially in the dark, thus the dark mode, so you don't have this glowing white screen blaring back at you. Also, you want to make sure that you have your blue light filter settings set on your iPhone or your Android phone, and you can set those to go on automatically at night. This is just lowers the blue light setting on your phone.
All right. 20-20-20 for your 20-20 vision.
Yes. And for 2020, this wonderful year we're living in.
And for 2020. So it's very symbolic in lots of ways. I think that's easy to remember. All right. We are still taking tech tips and questions, right?
Absolutely. Forever.
How do people get in touch with you?
Email joanna.stern@wsj.com. Or leave us a message at our work from home hotline, 314-635-0388.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
Can't wait to hear from everyone, but not you, Kateri. No more from you.
That's an April Fool's. Up next, how doctors are using video conferencing to provide care for coronavirus patients, even when they're miles and miles away. We'll talk about it after the break.
Filing taxes? Navigate tax season with the Wall Street Journal's Your Money 2020 Tax Guide. Compiled by our trusted reporters and editors, this ebook covers what the recent tax changes mean for you, your company, and the country. WSJ members can download now at wsjplus.com/tax2020.
If you're like a lot of people these days, you probably have been using video conferencing platforms like Zoom and FaceTime in many, many different ways in the past few weeks, logging into meetings and happy hours. Well, healthcare workers have been using this kind of technology as well, but in a slightly different way. As we've seen this surge of coronavirus patients who need life-saving care and a shortage of intensive care beds in some of the critical places like New York and Washington, California, they've been turning more and more to tele-ICUs. Here to tell us more about that is our tech columnist, Christopher Mims. Chris, thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
All right, Chris, tell us about some of this tele-ICU technology. What is it and how has it been used historically?
So about 20 years ago, a couple of physicians at Johns Hopkins identified what was a shortfall in the availability of intensive care physicians and nurses even then. These kinds of specialists don't tend to be in rural hospitals or even just smaller hospitals and even in big cities. And so what they wanted to do was use two-way video conferencing, which at the time was a lot more expensive and challenging, plus connected medical devices to make it possible for a doctor to attend at someone's bedside and treat them remotely. And of course, there are limitations to that. They don't have hands, their own hands in the facility, but, by directing nurses and doctors who are on hand, they were able to basically make it so that these intensive care physicians could treat many more patients than they could if they were simply attending in a hospital, because they could be sitting in what's almost like an air traffic control center in front of a bank of monitors and jump from one hospital to the next and just attend during those critical moments when their specialized knowledge was needed.
So you said that this has been around for 20 years. What does it look like today?
Today, the highest end of this technology is very sophisticated. So you have teams of doctors and nurses sitting in front of these monitors. It looks like they are traders on the floor of the stock exchange. They have readouts with patients' vital signs. They might even be able to remotely control certain devices like respirators. Obviously, they have a two-way feed with the patient. They have pan, tilt, and zoom ability on these pretty sophisticated cameras that allows them to look anywhere in the room, look at medical devices, look at readouts. And, of course, they can communicate with any nurses or doctors who are in the room as well. Perhaps more importantly for what's going on now with coronavirus, these systems also can connect to less sophisticated devices. So in emergencies, you can open up the right kind of web app on a browser and a laptop, let's say, and set that up at someone's bedside, or you can connect to a tablet. And this potentially allows folks who practice tele-ICU to scale it up really rapidly, because they just need more endpoints so that they can be at more bedsides, because presently only about 1 in 7 ICU beds in the U.S. is sort of conventionally or fully tele-ICU capable.
Yeah, I was going to say, it sounds like with all of those, all that technology sounds like it might be expensive. So even if you're reducing the number of doctors that you have to hire, you still have to have all that technology somehow ready and available if you're going to set that up for lots of new beds, which is what we're dealing with right now.
Yes. And the doctors I talk to who are at places like Northwell, which is New York State's largest hospital system, it's 72,000 employees. It's more than 23 hospitals, and Swedish in Seattle, which is another hotspot, and folks at Emory in Atlanta. They are facing this conundrum where the real crunch is human resources. It's how do you get enough of these doctors seeing enough of these patients? And so that's where the technology is kind of running ahead of the availability of humans, but in this case, in a good way, because these devices can be put at just about anybody's bedside, even in an improvised situation, like a tent hospital in Central Park or a hospital ship anchored off the Battery or a Javits Center where they're setting up beds.
So, I mean, on the one hand, you do have the ability for doctors to kind of remotely diagnose and oversee patients, but they still need people on the ground who are able to set these systems up. And then I think that there's also an issue with who gets to do this kind of telemedicine, right?
Yeah. So one of the challenges right now is, you know, if you are a physician and you want to have privileges to attend in a hospital, that typically takes 120 days. There are ways to get doctor's emergency privileges, especially if you want to beam them in, you know, from somewhere else via tele-ICU. But typically doctors also cannot practice across state lines. And until the most recent, one of the most recent stimulus packages that Congress passed related to coronavirus, you know, Medicare wouldn't even compensate doctors who were doing telemedicine. So there are a bunch of kind of bureaucratic and institutional barriers to really rolling this out, because I think in the best case scenario, I mean, Cuomo has proposed, you know, the federal government providing him a stash of ventilators, and then this flotilla of ventilators would just move around the country as different hotspots flared up. What you'd really like, I think, is crews of remote working intensivists to do the same, to be able to beam into all of these different hotspots as this pops up. Because, of course, what's happening is a lot of non-ICU doctors and nurses are being pressed into service to take care of this overwhelming patient volume. So they need backup, and they need somebody there who's experienced who can tell them what to do.
And also, because they're being pressed into service, they're getting sick.
Yeah. So that's a very important detail here as well, is, you know, a doctor who is, you know, dozens or 100 miles away on the other side of a screen is not being directly exposed to these patients. And that's, you know, a major issue, because every single one of these doctors who gets sick, it's an incredibly valuable human resource that suddenly gets, you know, taken out, or they have to go quarantine, or they don't even realize that they're sick immediately because of the shortage of tests, and they go infect other people. I mean, it's important to remember that in hospitals, I think the statistics are like 1 in 10 people who enters a hospital will get some kind of bug that they didn't have before. So in the age of coronavirus, it's even worse, of course.
All right. Well, the technology in this case is really giving us some hope. Tech columnist Christopher Mims, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. Don't forget to share your work from home tech tips and headaches with us. Our senior personal tech columnist, Joanna Stern, will be back tomorrow to answer your questions and share her favorite tips. You can leave us a voice message at the number in the description, or you can email Joanna at joanna.stern@wsj.com. And that was your Tech News Briefing for today. I'm Kateri Yoakum from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.